Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about the books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sydney, this dark time that we find ourselves in has given birth to a lot of really powerful Facebook meme culture.
No, that's definitely true.
The memes, they move so fast these days.
Yeah.
You can barely keep up.
You can, the one with the guy who's walking with the one girl, but he's turning around to check out the other girl. Mm-hmm. That one's getting a lot of use for a lot of different
Lot of different purposes.
See that one. A lot of the this is fine dog with the coffee cup on fire.
Yeah, this is fine dog is ubiquitous at this point, and rightly so.
One in particular that has surfaced that I actually saw required Snopes to check into recently is, I think, something worth discussing on our show because it is referencing.
Let me start recording. Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were serious for a second.
No.
I was going to say, what have we been doing?
This is how we always talk to each other. So, seated at a table, 6 feet away.
Mm-hmm. While I'm looking at my computer screen and timing us. So this one is interesting because it is based on medical history and it has some fact, but also not exactly right. A little inaccurate. I mean, not untrue, but I think Snopes rated it mixed. So, you know, there's some fact in there, but it's also not quite right. But it's being used to argue a point that is true and valid and I agree with, but I'd never think we should use something that's not accurate to support our cause. You know, whatever side you're on, it should only be based on facts and truth and not.
That's our side. That's the side we're on.
Right. So I think it's worth delving into so that we can talk about why it is important and relevant, just maybe not exactly in the way your aunt shared it on Facebook.
All right. I'm ready.
Not your aunt. Just
not my aunt.
Just the ubiquitous Facebook aunt. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about parades and disease.
Okay.
This is especially important in light of the fact that in I think when we recorded our last episode was the day of the president's press conference when he introduced his plan to make America back open up again, but whatever
make
it is.
Make America back open up again. That's what it was.
Something to that effect. It's such a tricky thing. Obviously, there's been a huge impact on the economy. Obviously, people are struggling. The economy, when we talk about the economy in this vague sense, it's important to remember, like, these are made up of people. The economy is made up of humans who are working and don't have jobs right now and need money and support and an income. And obviously, that's a problem. There's a lot of pushback from the medical and scientific community, and I would put myself in there, that we have to be careful how we do this. Yes, of course, this is a problem. But perhaps we could look at other ways of supporting the citizens of our nation as opposed to forcing them back to work into dangerous situations that might create another spike of cases and lead to overwhelming our medical system, which is what we've all been sacrificing to try to avoid.
Right.
It would make all of this flattening the curve for nothing if we all rushed back into the world.
I can't, my heart can't take that. It has to be for something.
And it would just mean not only, of course, more people would get sick, some people would die, and our medical system would be completely overwhelmed again, leading to the endangerment of all of our healthcare workers as well as all of our other essential workers. It would also mean we would have to be isolating longer.
Boo, hiss.
So let's do it right. We don't have enough tests. We don't have enough PPE to do any of the phases that were laid out at the press conference yet. Hopefully we will. But we're not there yet.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, Georgia.
Georgia. Just even like Trump said Georgia was wrong, right?
Hey, Georgia, if Trump's like, that's reckless, you probably should bump the brakes.
Come on, Georgia.
Yikes.
I used to live there and you're really embarrassing me right now.
Mm-hmm. Embarrassing yourself.
Too. Yeah.
And Tybee Island and the Bar City. You're embarrassing all the great Georgia landmarks.
And Waycross and the Okefenokee Swamp.
And your excellent aquarium and the Braves and Ted Turner. Montana Ted, as he insists I call him.
And my friend Carolyn.
And your city's friend Carolyn and her family. Everybody. We're all equally in the Olympic Park.
Come on, Georgia.
That big Ferris wheel. We're all equally ashamed.
We really do love Atlanta, though.
Yeah, love Atlanta.
I like to look, when things are complicated, when we're trying to find a way out of a difficult situation, I think it's helpful to look to the past and see, like, where did we screw up before? Because we usually try to screw it up that way again. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could not this time. Maybe there's a lesson we could learn. And this meme about the Liberty Loan Parade, the fourth Liberty Loan Parade, I should say, in Philadelphia on September 28th of 1918, has been shared a lot. Now, you had not seen it, right, Justin?
No, but I'm pretty choosy about my follows right at this time of year.
This was everywhere.
This time of time, I mean.
And a lot of articles came from this, recent articles. Now, I tried to read about all of this in pre-COVID articles, journal articles, and historical accounts of the time, because everything looks different in light of current events. So I tried to look into the history of this parade. Was it as reckless as the accusation of the Facebook meme is that the influenza pandemic of 1918, which is often called the Spanish flu, even though that's not really fair, as we've discussed on the show previously, the Spanish flu was only called that because at the time Spain was neutral during World War I, and so they did not have a media blackout on reporting like illness. But all the other countries where the flu was occurring didn't want to say that out loud because it would look, it would weaken their position. And so Spain reported it. So they got tagged with it. But it was not in any way Spanish in origin. But the accusation is that because even though the pandemic had been kind of halted and was under control, then Philadelphia loosened its social distancing restrictions in order to have this parade. And after this parade, there was a huge spike in cases. And as I already said, there's truth in there. The parade happened. There were actually three peaks to the Spanish flu. I should say the influenza pandemic of 1918, to be fair, to Spain.
I think Spain's over it. And that's such a mouthful. Spain's fine.
It is a misnomer, but to be fair. There are actually three peaks. And there was a second wave around this time, and it was the worst of the three. But it is not tied to exactly this parade or the later parades. Like, some of the memes tie it to the Armistice Day parades that occurred later on, and that's a whole other thing. So there's truth in here, but it's muddled. Because I want to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit about Boston, and I want to talk about San Francisco and masks, because everybody has a history that they're not thrilled about, not just poor Philadelphia, who gets as maligned as Georgia was at the beginning of this podcast. What's fascinating to read about is that even if you look at articles written before this pandemic, you can find tons of connection between the influenza pandemic of 1918 and coronavirus today. There's lots of things that are said that are, eerie in how similar and how well they apply to the current situation, which is frustrating.
Right.
Right. Because some of them are in reference to H1N1, which we think of as sort of like a bullet dodged, in that it was bad, but not nearly as bad as we feared it could be. And we still yet were somehow caught with our pants down.
Yeah.
It was at a time, the Spanish flu occurred at a time when transportation across the country was available. It had advanced in a way that it never had before, and across the oceans, that you could move. People were more mobile than they had ever been before at this point in history. Obviously, that is true today, only even more so. A pandemic was possible in a way that it had never really been, like, to spread as quickly, just because transportation was so much faster,
right,
and easier, and so many more people could do it. Communication between different parts of the world was available in a way it never had been before. So you could know about things that were happening overseas, about new illnesses that had sprung up even before they hit your shores. And you could take advantage of that or not, depending on if you were paying attention or not. But all of this was new, again, similar to today. And the presence of the media to report on these things, this was really the first big boom of that in especially American history, where all of this is being covered constantly, because this is when kind of the realization that disease sells papers hit. And so all of this is being, you know, broadcast to the public constantly. And that's really shaping their perception of the events and their reaction to the events. There was a strong public health system in place because of a more recent influenza epidemic, one in the late 1800s. There was a public health system to address this stuff. There is a feeling that because we understood germ theory pretty well now, it was much more widely accepted, not completely, but still more so, and how diseases were transmitted. And we understood things about isolation and quarantine because of tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. We really felt like we were set for anything.
We had it. Under control.
We were great. Not again, just the first time.
Okay.
It's again now.
Now is
the again. So it's still disputed exactly where it's an avian flu. You know, the genetics of it seem to have come from a bird at some point. So all the pigs are always involved, right? When it comes to the flu, there's always some chickens and pigs involved in there somewhere. You can blame one or the other, but it's all
chicken and pigs.
It's all the flu. So somewhere it jumped from an animal to a human. It's often been targeted to Kansas. As the where it first appeared, although it's hard to say, we're not exactly sure. It may have come from U.S. soil.
The first person said, that pig looks sick, but I'm going to kiss it anyway.
Perhaps. There were cases initially in the spring of 2018 largely associated with military installations. Mm-hmm. And this is not a conspiracy theory thing, although I think it's interesting. That was floated from time to time during the course of the year, especially as things got worse.
That it was a targeted biological attack.
Did Germany do this? But it doesn't seem so outrageous when you hear some of the conspiracy theories out there.
Yeah, that's right.
Today. Which, by the way, I think it's always relevant to point out that the novel coronavirus, which causes the disease COVID, did not originate in a lab anywhere on this planet. It originated in an animal and then jumped to a human. And that is very unfortunate luck for humans. But that's it. There is no conspiracy.
Okay.
I just feel like that should be reiterated.
I'm just going to take your word for it, I guess.
Well, that's the truth. That's what the genetics say.
Okay. Science.
Yeah. Anyway, science says it. So there was this thought, oh, was it something to do with Germany? No, it's really just it appeared on these military installations because of crowding.
Sure.
Lots of people living close together, right?
Yeah.
Any place where people live close together and moved all over the place could spread it easily. And so you have soldiers being moved throughout the country and carrying the virus with them. Like I said, it started with this cluster of cases in Kansas that were reported in April. There was another one in May. But this wave, this first peak of the flu, really wasn't that bad, all things considered. It certainly wasn't as bad as it was going to get. Throughout the spring, it was not obvious that this was a giant issue yet. And as we kind of move into the summer, you still have troops moving all over the country. So you've got people going from Boston to Philly to Kansas to New Orleans to the Puget Sound to the Great Lakes to Quebec, all over North America. But then as summer hits, we start shipping our American GIs along with their flu virus overseas.
Exporting
it to Europe. And somewhere, and even though on the U.S. end, things seem to start calming as we moved into the summer, which has, again, been cited, I think, in this current, like the idea that, well, in the summer, things will calm down. The heat will calm it down. So things did seem to calm down over the summer of 1918 for the U.S. somewhat, even as we start to see cases climbing throughout Europe and we start to see the pandemic burn throughout Europe. But by the fall, we knew a lot more about it as a world community. We knew there's a flu out there that seems pretty bad. And it also seems to have gotten worse, which probably did happen. The thought now is that there was some sort of mutation that occurred over that summer as soldiers were being transported all over the world and being stuck in, you know, close quarters together. At some point, the virus got worse.
I thought, haven't you told me before that usually when viruses mutate, they mutate to get weaker?
Well, this one didn't.
Dang.
No,
I guess that's why you say usually, huh?
Not necessarily, but yeah. I mean, the ones that make the most people sort of sick and are spread while keeping people well enough to continue out into the community are selected for, right? Whereas the ones that send you straight to bed and then you can't leave and you can't interact with humans don't, you know, they're outcompeted.
Mm, makes sense.
But in this case, somewhere in there, the flu tended to seem to get deadlier. And it was a lot more merciless into who it targeted. The first wave, like most influenza seasonal flu outbreaks, tended to target the very young and the very old. Whereas as we enter into late summer, early fall, we start seeing everybody getting sick.
Yeah.
You know, healthy young adults all of a sudden. Our soldiers, troops are getting sick. And I think we've said this before, but it bears mentioning, the influenza pandemic of 1918 and into 1919 killed more people, both soldiers and civilians, than the war did.
The war itself,
World War One. Yeah. I mean, at this point, as we look into the summer, it was like half of British troops were infected. I mean, it was all over the place. So as we move into the fall, we know there's this risk. We know that it's what we called at the time a crowd disease. This is not something you got while you were isolated in your home. This is something that you got when you were out in the world. Okay. So we understood its infectious nature. There was an outbreak at Fort Devens outside Boston in September, and that was kind of a red flag. That was a pretty big outbreak, and a lot of people were nervous about it. And even though people were sick there, they were still shipping those soldiers out who had been exposed to the flu there at Fort Devens to other bases all over the country, which, of course, helped spread the virus. And in the interest of fairness, I think we should point out that Boston also had a parade around that time.
Boston.
So it's not just Philadelphia that was parade happy. On September 3rd, Boston had a Win the War with Freedom parade, and it featured a lot of the soldiers that were stationed there, that were at that base. So a lot of people who were infected went out into the streets and partied, and then we saw a lot more spread of flu among the community.
Parades aren't even that fun, guys. I don't know if you all can hang in there for like 20 more years, TV is going to be invented, and then you'll see. You don't need parades.
You don't need a parade.
You don't need parades.
No, especially like, did they even have any of the big balloons? The big
floats? Do you guys even have big balloons?
There were already places where public health officials started trying to say things about social distancing. This is really where, like,
did they call it that? Is that an old term?
Yeah, social distancing. You really start to see these measures in place pretty quickly, but almost immediately you also see the business community and a lot of like larger business, like wealthy, the owners of larger businesses pushing back against this and saying like, now, wait a second, we're Americans. We have our freedoms. We got our rights. That was one big argument. The other was you can't just crash the economy for the flu.
I'm glad we outgrew that. I'm glad we learned our lesson there.
Theaters were closed before a lot of other things, and theater owners felt very singled out because there was even a period of time in a lot of places where like bars and restaurants were still open, but theaters were closed.
It's wild.
Right, which seems silly. The non-essential businesses started complaining about essential ones and questioned what the definition was and all the quibbling that we have seen, I think, now. It was the same thing. It was 100%. The same thing. And there was no safety net. There were people living paycheck to paycheck, just as they are now. There were people who not having their kids in school meant they didn't know who was going to take care of them, and somebody had to take time off work. There was no universal child care, as there is none now. Also, there was no universal health care. So all the same issues that made this incredibly difficult then are, of course, still in place now.
Yeah, I didn't fix any of those per se.
No. We do have
streaming, which they did not then. So we did fix that because I'm sure they were also very bored. They probably played like Gin Rummy or something.
In one of the articles I read, you're kind of skipping ahead, but it's okay. The author specifically mentions that maybe the easy availability of entertainment, things like streaming services, would make it so that a future pandemic would not be so taxing on humanity.
You're saying, and when is this from?
That article was written during, it was 2009, during H1N1.
Oh, I thought it was like during 1918. They're like, listen, if y'all can just invent Netflix, please. We're so bored.
And then she said, I'm the doctor. So anyway, so by the fall, we knew something was up. There were people speaking out saying, we got to do something. We got to stop this. This seems to be worse. Whatever was happening in the spring, it's way worse now. More people are getting sick. People are getting way sicker than they were. And so when Philadelphia started planning their fourth Liberty Loan Parade, you can see why it's easy to go to look back and go, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Around that same time, St. Louis actually had a similar parade, like a same kind of theme and stuff. They canceled theirs. But Philadelphia decided to have theirs. And these were, by the way, parades that were held a lot of places throughout the U.S. to help raise money for war bonds, to like get you all excited.
Good cause.
Patriotic,
I guess. But
right. But it was it was also like something to hold up. Like, look how much money my city raised for the war effort. So it was a big deal to not have one of these parades. There was a lot of political pressure to have it. There was a lot of economic pressure. And the people probably wanted it, assuming that it's safe. And, you know, when you hold a big giant parade, it sends the message to citizens that it is safe to hold a big giant parade.
That's true.
Whether it is or not. The outbreak in Philadelphia at that point was largely in the Naval Yard among, again, members of the military. Some had come directly from Boston. And there was not, this is one of those things that's been debated much since then. The public health officer, William Cruzan, who was in charge, kind of like the lead at the health department in Philadelphia, it's much debated how much he knew or what he thought or what pressures he was bending to by allowing this parade to go forward. Or I should say, could he have even stopped it? If he had spoken out against it, many would say, like, well, he would have just been fired.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't have been able to help later when things, as you probably guess, are going to get bad. I don't know. I think it's easy to look back and find a bad guy. I think we see now that there's a lot of pressure on governors and mayors and health department officials from a lot of different places. And
to open back up and get things moving again.
Yes. And so I don't think it's so easy to find one person that is the bad guy. And I don't know if there was a big outcry from the medical community. I didn't find evidence that there was like a huge group of doctors who were going, you can't have this parade. You can't do it. It's going to be terrible. I think there was like one guy who wrote an article about it like a week later. But like, you don't see this giant thundering cry to not have the parade.
Right.
Maybe it was there, maybe it existed, and maybe Cruzan ignored it. It's hard to say.
Regardless, the parade happened.
Yes. On September 28th, 200,000 people packed the sidewalks of Broad Street in Philadelphia.
I'm assuming there was repercussions from this.
I'm going to tell you what they were, Justin, after we go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre
for the mouth. So there's a lot of stuff that medical TV shows can get wrong, but I know one of the most disappointing things for me when I started practicing is how uncomfortable conventional scrubs can be. They don't necessarily fit all body shapes really well, and they're scratchy. And that's until I found Figs. So our shifts in the hospital can be really long, or in the office, and you need scrubs that feel good, that fit you well, and they're going to last all day long. Figs makes scrubs for the medical professionals of today. They're not like a paper bag. They're not itchy. They feel great. They're so soft and comfortable. They're form-fitting. They're made for the kind of work that we actually do, where we're up and down, we're on our feet. Sometimes I'm sitting on the exam room floor checking out somebody's toenails, and I need to be comfortable while I'm doing it. They're antimicrobial, so you know that you're going to be protected. You can wash them every time you wear them, which is super important. I wash my scrubs, obviously, every day that I wear them. And they look good, so you can look like those cute TV docs and nurses that made us go into medicine in the first place. You can check out tops like the Katarina and the Cade pants. It's an easy, relaxed fit, and then so many cargo pockets, which I can tell you that's the main thing we need, are pockets for our pens, pockets for our notebooks, pockets for my Narcan, pockets for everything. I love Figs. They are so comfortable. And with the work that I do, kind of unconventional out in the street medicine, I need something that feels good all day long. With back to school season upon us, it's the perfect time to stock up with some fresh outfits for the year. And Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. If you're in healthcare or if you're shopping for someone who is, you can get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX, FIGSRX.
I have really enjoyed experimenting with fashion thanks to Quince. Now, I know that that sounds wild coming from me, Justin McElroy, a podcaster. Why, Justin, are you even wearing clothes? I hear you. But when I want to try a new look, what I love about Quince is they have a lot of different clothing items that are at a great price and are really well made. So if you want to try something, you're not sure if it's like, is this going to be the right fit for me? I don't know. Try it out with Quince. There's craftsmanship that you see in every detail of these clothes. I've bought several, like a pair of shorts I love, a pair of pants I wear literally every day. I mean, nearly every day, not literally every day. You know what I mean? Because there's some days you're just like, you can't. But I've been so happy with the pieces that we have gotten from Quince. And also there's a really wide variety of stuff. You know, there's silk tops, skirts for dressing up, denim for everyday wear. I don't mention a lot of the specific items because honestly, you shouldn't trust me about that part of it if it's outside my specific range of clothes for my body. But I will say this, for my body, Quince does right. It sounds weird now that I say it like that. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/sawbones for free shipping on your order. 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/sawbones to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sawbones.
So, Sydney, before the parade passes by, I need to know what happened after the parade passed by. It doesn't work exactly.
I don't think it works here.
No.
What do you think happened, Justin? If you had to wager a guess.
People got sick. They didn't feel good. They got sick from it, from the parade.
One big difference between influenza and the coronavirus is that people knew they were sick a lot faster. You didn't have quite as long an incubation period.
Gotta be nice if that was the case for coronavirus, just for testing and understanding how we're managing the disease. It seems so hard to like, so who have you talked to in the past 2 weeks? You know, what have you been in the last 2 weeks?
That is advantage coronavirus there.
What are some other things that you like about coronavirus, Dr. McElroy?
No.
Sheesh, if you're going to list all its great attributes, shocker, medical history podcast host loves coronavirus. Is a don't big fan.
That. Somebody's going to edit that into a clip. And
no, please don't do that.
No, I do not. I do not love coronavirus. It is an advantage.
You're just saying it has its advantages.
It's advantage over flu. If the two viruses were fighting, in my head, they are now. I'm seeing it. You can see it too. Just look up some pic. Anyway, however, the consequences were swift.
Taylor Swift canceling all her concerts in 1918. Because of the spread of the Spanish flu.
Because she knew, within 72 hours of the parade, every bed in Philadelphia's 31 hospitals was filled.
That's that quick turnaround on the flu there.
Yeah. And by the next week, 2,600 people in Philadelphia had died.
Dang.
From the flu. complications.
I hope that was a good parade.
About a week later, a little over a week, maybe 2 weeks, actually.
I hope it was a very good parade. I hope they were tossing out full-size candy bars or something.
A week after that, it was 4,500.
Hachi-machi.
So, and because I think this is particularly relevant, even though, like, as you can already tell, the timeline is a little off here. And there were other reasons. Social distancing was not completely in place. It's not like they lifted it for the parade. This is early into the fall. The worst month of the flu in this country would be October.
Right.
So we weren't into the worst of it yet. And so it's debatable to sit here and say, like, they knew and they lifted all these restrictions for a parade and look what happened.
Right.
They weren't quite doing it right. Because the worst would is yet to come, but it was definitely made worse by events like this, mm-hmm. like this parade. And there's definitely a voice that says, you didn't know. Somebody didn't know. Somebody didn't wasn't, say something.
I mean, if St. Louis canceled theirs, like, certainly word had gotten around. Somebody knew something.
And it's easy to look back and see there were a handful of cities who did things really well during this pandemic and a handful of cities who really didn't. And so somebody knew something. Most of the city's medical professionals were actually gone, which worsened, certainly, which added to the death toll.
In the war?
Yes, they were gone in the war effort. And so the system was completely overwhelmed. Mm. I mean, everything we've been talking about, we wanted to avoid by flattening the curve. I think what, unfortunately, it seems like a lot of my colleagues in New York have been experiencing, they were overwhelmed. The system was not prepared to hold the number of patients it would see all at once. And none of the system, just, I mean, obviously the hospitals themselves, the doctors, nurses, there weren't enough of any kind of medical professional, but all the other services too. I mean, even like the funeral parlors,
yeah.
and you know, the morgue was overwhelmed. It was a gruesome scene in Philadelphia following this parade, which you can see why it has left this mark on history because of all that. Afterwards, Cruzan and all the other doctors and city health officials responded by closing schools, churches, bars, stores, everything. I mean, locked the place down, did all the stuff and more that we're mm-hmm. doing now. But I think most of the damage had already been done. And it is true that as fall turned into winter, we actually saw a little bit of a downslope in cases, probably secondary to a lot of cities doing what Philadelphia did, kind of shutting the doors.
Shutting it down, yeah.
And then we did see a third wave, a third spike in cases as we go into the winter at the end of 2018 into 2019, which does follow, you know, Armistice Day is in November. You have all the parade. There were parades and parties and celebrations that happened throughout November after that and into December. And we did see another spike in cases. It was not as bad as that second wave. That second wave, it's a W curve, if you can imagine.
Sure.
And the middle of the W was definitely the worst of this flu pandemic. There were different protocols, like I said, throughout the city. Or throughout the country. And there were a lot of things that were similar to here. And there were a lot of things that were similar to now. Some places mandated that you wear masks. There was a huge effort for at home. People who, so largely women at the time, were asked to make homemade masks to hand out to people because nobody had any. You know, there were some, I mean, there were medical masks, but if most people at home didn't have masks, they did things like banning public spitting at this time, which,
hey, why did we wait so long to ban public spitting?
If we could have just banned that. I'm so glad I have lived in the time since spitting in public was sort of like frowned upon. I know it's not banned, but like,
it's basically banned.
I mean, like,
it's
canceled. I don't see a lot of people spitting in public. No. Oh, so
spitting
gross.
In public is canceled.
Spit is so gross, guys. Spit is gross.
Cindy gets really yucked out about spit.
It's like the one thing. It's my one yuck. In Mobile, Alabama, the public health officers advised against kissing. They actually put out you couldn't like get arrested for kissing, but they would tell you like, hey, stop that.
Please don't.
Don't kiss. It's dangerous. Kissing's dangerous. In San Francisco, they did mandate that you had to wear masks in public places. That was one of the few places that actually enforced it. You know, a lot of places may have recommended it, kind of like we have now, right? Like, nobody's going to, at least here in West Virginia, I'm not going to get stopped on the street if I'm not wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. But it is recommended that I wear a mask. And I would. And you should. Justin. Yeah. I'm looking at you.
I'm just, it's just you and me in the room.
I know.
Why do I need a mask?
Well, not right now. I just mean, you know, if you're out.
You know, I wear one if I'm out.
I know you do. It's reinforcing.
Yeah.
I'm not even that creeped out when I see people wearing them like I used to be.
No, it's becoming, yeah, I think it's becoming more culturally
I remember accepted. Flying when we went on the cruise, getting to the airport. I remember seeing people in masks. And it kind of weirding me out. I'm wondering if I bet that even after this is sorted, like you're still going to see. I think that culturally we might move towards where some of the Asian countries where that's like a common courtesy. If you're sick, you wear, you know, a mask usually.
I think you're definitely right that masks are going to become a lot more like accepted as I mean, because it does stand. It did prior to this definitely stand out, I think, in this country if you were walking around with a mask on.
Plus, if I know America, if there's something you can put brands on. We're going to have a bajillion of them in different styles and colors and cuts.
Yes. They are surfaced to me already. Probably from the research I did on the mask episode. I get those surfaced to me a lot, those ads. So in San Francisco, this was mandated. And initially, it was just for people who work in jobs like customer facing kind of jobs, like a bank teller or a bartender had to wear a mask. But by the end of October, it was just a general mandate. If you're out in public, you got to wear a mask and you could face a fine. You could face jail time if you didn't comply. It was a big deal. The mayor, actually, during a even though he did believe in this and supported this, during a boxing match, he was photographed with his mask like hanging off of his ear, not wearing it. And he was fined $50 by the chief of police.
I saw I made my extremely rare shopping trip today. And I saw so many people who had it like, I saw a woman who was working at the store pull down her mask to yell for someone else and then pull her mask back up. Literally half the masks below your nose. Folks, remember. If it's below your nose, it's not doing anything.
That's right. Don't pull it. A chin strap will not help you in the fight against coronavirus or anyone else, I should say. The masks are really more for other people than you, which might, if you think about it as an altruistic thing, I don't know if that helps people maybe be a little more conscious of it. But yeah, it has to be covering your nose and your mouth the whole time while you're talking. And if you need to eat and drink, you shouldn't be doing that out in public where other people are. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunately, that's the thing right now.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't pull it down. And you shouldn't have it dangling off of your ear. And
Mr. Mayor.
And because there was this mandate only lasted about a month initially. And then in January, they brought it back because of that third spike of cases. In January, they went ahead and reissued the mandate that you have to wear a mask in public. And this time people were organized against it. They were mad about it the first time. It only lasted about a month. They didn't have enough time to like make signs, I guess. They needed some time. And so by January, they made some signs and they formed the Anti-Mask League, is what they were called. And they protested to the state government and said, like, San Francisco is being unfair. I don't want to wear a mask. This is wrong.
I burp in it and get stuck. It's terrible.
And of course, even like now, there were doctors who supported them and were like, yeah, we shouldn't have to wear masks. This is ridiculous. And I see doctors saying that kind of stuff. There's bad apples in every profession. And there were people from other health department officials in other areas and from the council who were like, yeah, I don't want to wear a mask. It's individual rights. A lot of it was based in that. This is our right as an American. To expose everybody to whatever, viral particles flinging from my mouth when I talk. So the fight lasted about a month. And it was a large anti-mask league. There were like 4,000 people or something as part of this league who went and protested. There's just a good number of people to get that mad about having to wear a mask.
Don't you love seeing people protesting the lockdown now wearing masks out about like, okay, bud. Right.
I'm still trying to parse the guy who was dressed as George Washington.
Yeah. That was a look.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there were protests. More people, though, agreed with the masks. And it did make an impact because the majority of people did wear masks when they were polled, the vast majority. And I think that's true today. These protests look big depending on the camera angle they're being filmed from. But the vast majority of people want to stay social distance and stay safe and don't want to risk their lives or their grandparents' lives to fix the stock market. If you're interested more about the Anti-Mask League, by the way, I got this tip from a Twitter thread from an NPR investigative reporter named Tim Mock.
Okay.
And it was a really cool thread that really delves deep into this whole anti-mask league and the history of that in San Francisco. So
he's at Tim K. Mock, M-A-K.
No, in case you're curious, that's where I found the tip off from it there. And then but he goes into way more detail. So in various parts of the country, various responses, some places did really well with social distancing and with wearing masks and with hygiene. There was a huge hygiene movement that came out of this. It was actually specifically targeted at men because men were seen as having like really poor personal hygiene because they didn't think it was manly. Like it was manly to walk around spitting and coughing on your sleeve and
being grody
and being like grody and booger covered or whatever. I don't know. Is that manly?
Yeah, boogers, Superman.
Boogers, dirty. Yeah,
you are asking dirty hands. You're asking the wrong cat about what's manly. I'm sorry, barking up the wrong podcaster.
I should have known that by now. Yeah. But there was actually a big movement targeted mainly at men to like, hey, no, it's cool, it's manly to wash your hands. It's manly not to spit. Be a real man and protect others by wearing a mask. That was and like even the Boy Scouts like got involved in this.
What if we put flames on it?
But there was this big movement of hygiene as a result of this and that kind of thing. But all things told, the influenza pandemic of 1918-1919 had a huge impact on human history. 500 million people, that's a third of the world's population, became infected. The estimated number of deaths was around 50 million worldwide, 675,000 in the United States. As I said, it was responsible for more deaths than World War I. And it changed, you know, I think certainly the course of human history. It's been thought that perhaps Wilson had the flu.
That's 10% mortality. That's a very bad flu.
Yeah. It was a bad flu, and then also it was 100 years ago. So
sure, right.
Our ability to support somebody, you know, and treat someone who has this influenza, but still, no, it was a terrible, terrible influenza pandemic. And you would hope that when you can look back on something like this in history, and there are while it is often called like the forgotten pandemic and stuff. It's been called that in enough books about it that I feel like
we remember now.
It doesn't have to be forgotten. All this information that I used to create this show is based on articles that were written for the most part before what's happening now. I found like that Twitter thread that's current that led me to research. But all of this was written before, and the lessons that we're supposed to have learned have been laid out for us over the past 100 years. And especially if you look to 2009 with H1N1, when we didn't know how bad it was going to be, you see a ton of academic work surrounding that that compares it to the Spanish flu and then looks forward and says, what can we do to prepare for when something like that happens again? And it's very frustrating to read that. Because all of this stuff we're talking about, you see the corollary in our life today.
Yeah, but Sid, that's just, I know where you're coming from, but also that's just humans. That's just, it's like fool me once, shame on me, shame on you, fool me twice. That was 100 years ago. I don't remember what happened to that other guy. Fool me again. I don't know. Let's see how it goes.
I think that
we are incapable of actually preparing. If we were to prepare for all the different worst case scenarios in the way that we really should, that would be all that we do. That I'm saying, I know, maybe and I'm not being anti-science there. I'm just saying, like, I don't think humans can, I just don't think we're good at that kind of thing.
But in all these articles that I read, the academics, scientists, epidemiologists, medical doctors, public health officials, people who know these things, who went to school, who paid to learn these things and are now paid to know these things and use these things in, mm-hmm. in everyday life, they have been telling us that this was coming. Not this exactly, or at this time.
Yeah, but they weren't saying it was here. Do you understand?
The nature of a pandemic is that it's everywhere.
Yeah, but it wasn't happening yet. So it seemed like we still had some time. You know when you mean to buy salt for your driveway because it seems like mm-hmm. it might snow mm-hmm. soon? But you're like, it hasn't snowed yet. And then when you go to buy it, all the salt is gone because it did snow and everybody needs salt at the same time. I'm saying that's the situation we find ourselves in. This is not to excuse the government for not preparing for this pandemic when they saw it coming 3 months ago. This is not what I'm saying. And we should have had preparedness plans in place. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if you look around the globe, a lot of people weren't great at preparing for this pandemic because I just don't think human beings work that way. I just don't think we think that way.
Well, maybe we need to start if we didn't with the last, you know, pandemics.
That was 100 years ago. But they didn't even have TV. H1N1
was a giant warning. I mean, like a devastating warning. I mean, plenty of people died from H1N1. Like it was a...
Yeah, but we dodged it and then we got high off of that. We felt immortal. We felt so good. We got so we got hit with a bunch of serotonin from and adrenaline from dodging that bullet. Woo, never felt so alive. Probably forgot about it because that's how humans are. That's just how we are.
The thought process by a lot of academics during H1N1 is that, like I said, we would be so much better prepared now because people would be more scientifically literate. And they would understand the importance of social distancing so much better. And you wouldn't have things like public officials who stand at a boxing match during a pandemic with their mask dangling off their ear. You wouldn't have those kinds of slip ups. You wouldn't have Ben Carson standing at the podium touching his face as he tells people not to touch their face. I mean, you wouldn't have those kinds of things was the prediction.
Mm.
And that it would be so easy for everybody to social distance because certainly by the year 2020, we should have... you know, some sort of social safety net for the economy, for people who are living paycheck to paycheck so that it doesn't have to be that way. Child care and health insurance.
Now that I want to get out in front of that. Absolutely. You know, I'm on board with that for sure.
Right. I hope so.
No argument there.
You better be.
Love health care. Think everybody should get it.
But what I would say about this Facebook meme is that even though they've muddled the timeline a little bit and it wasn't quite that extreme, there is a lot we can draw from this pandemic and say, look, we knew 100 years ago that these methods could be useful and indeed could keep us from having more cases than are necessary and from overwhelming our medical system, which saves lives because if everybody who needs one can get a ventilator, more people live.
Yes.
You know, if everybody who needs one can be in a hospital, more people live. So there are lessons we could draw from and practice today. I think that bending to political pressures and, you know, business interests, which is what a lot of this is coming from, right? From
like
mega wealthy business owners. I think we see the consequences of that. We can see that played out in different places around the country at the time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the articles I was reading is from Kenneth C. Davis, who wrote More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu in the First World War. And I was reading an article, then again, this predates our current pandemic, but I found it very prescient. He talks about, this was actually written, this article was written in 2018, on the eve of November 11th, the 100 years since the end of World War One, and he says there will be parades and public ceremonies highlighting the enormous losses and long-lasting impact of that global conflict, but it will also be a good moment to remember the damaging costs of short-sighted medical decisions shaped by politics during a pandemic that was more deadly than war.
Hmm.
And I think it's really important to remember that this is a long game. Keeping people alive and keeping them safe is a long game. And we can't just look to tomorrow. We have to look to what we're going to be doing for the next year until hopefully an effective vaccine is available for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we don't need to be doing is ingesting or injecting disinfectants.
Well, that took a weird turn at the end, Sid.
That just happened, and I feel like it should be mentioned. We did a whole episode on not drinking bleach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I specifically said don't inject bleach.
Shouldn't inject bleach or any disinfectant.
No. And if you see people talking about the hydrogen peroxide IV as evidence for that, that's also fake.
Mm.
I think we covered it on the hydrogen peroxide episode.
Fake.
No, that is also a
also
huge...
sunlight we've discussed.
Yes. And the hydrogen peroxide IV therapy specifically is hugely dangerous. Please do not pursue that. Sunlight probably less dangerous unless you're talking about standing out in direct sunlight for long periods of time without sunscreen, in which case it is dangerous. So mm-hmm. You should wear sunscreen. Is that all the nonsense we need to refute?
I think so. For this week.
For this week.
Yeah, we should actually stop recording so no new nonsense comes onto the desk.
I feel like it's happening. Please keep social distancing. Please keep staying home to protect those that you love and even those you don't love. Let's just protect it. Why not? Heck, let's protect everybody right now. Please stick to that.
I want to make a point because I feel like I need to circle back to something real quick that I was talking about. I am not in any way trying to dismiss the lack of preparation from this administration with regards to coronavirus. I'm not in any way saying that. I'm saying that humanity is just bad at planning for worst case scenarios. But I think what the other part of that is, I feel like humanity, when we're at our best, can be really good at reacting to them when they happen. And that is, I think that's what's hard for me to see now, is seeing people who aren't answering that call and sort of like, okay, this is the trade-off for not being good at preparing for this stuff, is we got to be good at like handling it. And I think that that's the least that any of us can do right now, is like try to rise to that. And that's what is frustrating to me.
I think it's very true. And I think in a vacuum of leadership, unfortunately, that kind of, I mean, you don't know who to trust and you don't know who to believe. Fauci, Anthony Fauci is the answer. If you are looking for who to trust and who to believe.
Yeah. Just Fauci.
Look to Anthony Fauci.
Everyone, please keep Anthony Fauci safe. That's going to do it for us.
You can put him somewhere with RBG.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us, but about 6 feet away. That's going to do it for us for this, because you know they'll fall in love. That's just how. That's going to do it for this.
They're both happily married.
You put two beautiful sexual people in a room, said.
I can't with this. No.
Who are
social distancing.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. Hope you're staying safe. Stay insane in as much as it is possible. Thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thank you to you so much for listening, especially in these times when there's so much gobbledygook and nonsense going on out there. Why don't you share the show with people? We would sure appreciate it. The sawboneshow.com is a good URL that you can use. That takes us to the podcast, or share a link to iTunes, whatever podcasting thing you use, and leave a rating, review, whatever. We sure appreciate it. But that is going to do it for us for this week. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.